Welcome to The James Rice Show, a humorous, entertaining, and sometimes thought-provoking look at teaching and studying abroad. Join the conversation as James guides you through his experiences and provides insights into how to improve your English and how to improve your teaching of English. And now, here's the man you've been waiting for, James Rice.
Hello, my class, and welcome to the James Rice Show, broadcasting in over 60 countries. Any new countries joining us recently, Stephanie, our lovely producer behind the glass? Anybody new? Botswana from Africa. Wow. Okay. Welcome, my students, my new students from Botswana. The James Rice Show is now available on SoundCloud and Google Play, Google Music. Yeah, we're out there. We're spreading our wings. That's an idiom, spreading our wings, which means we are getting a wider audience on some new and different platforms. So check out that Google Music, Google Play. You can find us on that. Of course, we're on iTunes and Stitcher, a podcast as well. All right, coming up today, we are going to be catching up with Karandeep Singh. He was the 19-year-old entrepreneur from India, living in Italy, and we are discussing his new chatbot for education. So if you don't know what a chatbot is, Karandeep's going to explain that to us. He has been on our show before, and there are some new developments, and we've asked him to come back and update us on what's happening in the chatbot for education world. And he has told us he is also going to be bringing his chatbot to the United States of America. Yeah, in October. So stay tuned for details where you can meet Karandeep. You can check out his amazing chatbot. And we'll give you details about where he's going to be in the USA. Also, later in the show, if you stay with us, we are going to be talking about some major enrollment declines in U.S. schools. Yes, some unbelievable numbers have been released that are showing a 50% decline in enrollment by international students to colleges and universities in the USA. 50% decline. So we're going to talk about why that's happening and what's going on, and a little bit later on in the show. Also, this week, we are looking at tests. Yeah, you hate doing them. Teachers hate giving them, but they still are being used in schools. And there is huge money, of course, being made on standardized tests, the IELTS, the TOEFL, the TOEIC. So we're going to discuss a little about testing today in our teacher talk section. And we're also going to take a look at some idioms that use the word test in our idiom of the week. So that's really interesting and coming up. That's coming up next, actually, or coming up a little bit later, actually, the idiom of the week. Because, you know, there are some interesting did you knows in there. What's a did you know? Well, I'm glad you asked. Okay. A did you know? Here's an example of a did you know. Did you know that the first written test, the first ever written test, occurred in and around 1840? Yep. Before then, teachers only did speaking tests. Yeah. So for almost 2,000 years, we were only doing speaking tests. So why the change? Glad you asked, James. Well, they started testing for a couple of reasons. One, it was a fast way to check the knowledge of many people, many students. Yeah. So class sizes were increasing, so they had to do testing. So think about that. Smaller class size means a more varied way a teacher can do testing, or a teacher can check your understanding of different subjects. When you get into a larger class size, you have to do these kind of standardized tests. Yeah, that's it. The second reason why they switched to written tests over the speaking test was that the teachers could quickly compare children's ability. Yeah. So they started separating children at a very young age based on their test scores. You know, not much has changed, right? How well you do on the Cambridge test or the TOEFL test or the IELTS test separates you from others. You may not get into Harvard if your test score is too low, right? Yeah. So, you know, in fairness, though, you know, tests have always been around. It's just that before 1840, they were not written tests. Teachers could actually test each student's ability in a variety of non-written ways. And that is the point for today. A written test is not the only way teachers can and should assess you. They need a variety of methods to test your ability. Now, I am a big fan of project-based learning. And for me, that is a great way to test students' abilities. Another question you may have out there is, why are there so many standardized tests like TOEIC, IELTS, TOEFL, the Cambridge test? Well, the idea was that the quality of education was not good enough, and therefore they needed to collect data to see what was wrong and how to fix it. You know, that is how it all started. And in some cases, it has remained. You know, schools want to see your standardized IELTS or TOEFL score because basically they do not trust the English classes being taught at your school. So that's all coming up a little bit later. We're going to talk about testing in teacher talk section. All right, now some new news for the James Rice Show. We have a new number one country. Stephanie, hit the music. All right, so the United States of America is our new number one listeners for the James Rice Show. It has skyrocketed back into first place, no doubt because of the episode I did on Donald Trump's speaking style, which has become very, very popular. So you got to listen to that episode. I don't have the number on me, but you got to check out Donald Trump's speaking style episode, and it's a very interesting episode. So that has moved the United States into our number one country. Thank you, USA. And Brazil has dropped down to second place. Sorry, my Brazilian friends. I know you are still depressed at the World Cup results. Japan is in third. Canada dropping all the way down to fourth. What? Canada? I need to get my family listening again. And Korea has jumped back into fifth place. A shout out, though, to Spain and Colombia listeners. My students, you guys were close to cracking the top five of the James Rice Show. So thank you guys, and keep spreading the word about the James Rice Show. Thanks. Thanks, everybody, of course, for your support, for listening to the show. And don't forget, of course, visit our YouTube channel. You guys are not going on there to study your English. Come on now, get on that YouTube and study. We've got some free English lessons. This week, we posted a lesson on modifying comparatives. Modifying comparatives. What? Do you know what that is? Do you know what we're talking about? Do you know this expression? Far more. Do you know how to use it? Check out the YouTube channel, you know, and hit subscribe so you get those free video updates of the short lessons that we have. So you can access it through our website, www.thejamesriceshow.com, and hit the YouTube library there. Of course, on the website as well, we have those episode pages, each episode, and when you click on the episode page, you get extra information that we share with everybody about some of the topics that we are talking about on the show. And a lot of teachers use those topics in their class, so they get students to listen to the podcast. They bring in some of the extra material, perhaps assign it as homework, and it helps to create a better conversation class, which is what we're hoping to do with this podcast. All right, coming up next, we're going to chat with Karandip Singh about chatbots in education.
The Study It textbooks are the first ever completely digital and interactive English as a Second Language textbook series. Once downloaded, these textbooks do not require a Wi-Fi connection. Students and teachers can use them anywhere, anytime. Used in over 40 schools, universities, and NGOs worldwide. Study It is the future of English teaching. Visit www.studyitbooks.com for more information.
We are happy to welcome back the young entrepreneur Karandip Singh, who has, with his team, created an amazing chatbot that is going to replace us teachers. Welcome back, Karandip.
Hello, good morning, James.
So can you bring us up to date on what's been happening, and what is a chatbot for some of those people that maybe didn't listen to our podcast interview before? And what's a chatbot, and what is your vision of its use in the classroom?
Okay, yeah, sure. Basically, actually, a chatbot, what is it? Basically, when you chat with someone, with a person via internet, via social networks, for example, WhatsApp Messenger, there's a person A and a person B. Person A sends a message to the person B. The person B is able to understand the message and give the answer. With the chatbot, there's a person A and there's an intelligent machine that's called chatbot. Person A send a message to the machine, and the machine is able to understand what the person A has said and able to answer on the question, or maybe conversate, not just question, but also conversate. This is made possible via machine learning, artificial intelligence, and especially a section called natural language process, NLP, that's used in computer science to understand a human language and process it.
Right. Now, how is, we get it, and we see chatbots being used a lot in kind of sales conversations,
yeah.
People trying
yes.
to use Facebook Messenger on sales, but what's the use in the classroom?
Okay, in the classroom, it can have really enormous advantages because it can guide a single person, a single student, because in a class formed by 25 students, the teacher isn't able to give assistance to every single student because it's impossible. You need a private tutoring. Actually, with the chatbot, you can decrease the cost of private tutoring, and you can use the chatbot as your personal assistant when you are doing exercise or you would like to learn something. For example, you are at home and you don't understand something about math. You can just say, hey, how can I solve this kind of equation? And the chatbot is able to guide step by step and talk to a student.
Yes, teachers, that's where yeah. the chatbot replaces us, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like it's more like a personal assistant. So
yeah, it's more
they
like
get
a,
quick answers to that. Now,
yeah.
Karandip's in, you are in Italy, correct?
Yeah, I am based in Italy right now.
Yeah, and you were going to Germany
yes.
the last time we talked. Can you tell us, update us on what happened there?
Yeah, actually, I went to Germany because of the startup environment, because actually there's in the Europe, Germany, especially Berlin, or cities like Berlin and Stuttgart are really the capital of startups right now. And there are young people like me, especially young entrepreneurs have a lot of opportunity to meet with investors. And there are really, big entrepreneurs are really, they have a huge vision about the future and things like that. And actually, in Italy, there's a little bit old stuff. And they're not open to technologies like that, that way in Germany. And yeah, I went to Germany. I have participated to some startup programs. And we have even won that from ACP company. It's a software house in Germany. And right now, I have learned a lot in Germany. That was the best thing because for me, actually, in Italy, I couldn't. When I started, I was 17 years old, and in Italy, they didn't even trust me. In Germany, they never asked my age, and it was really great for that. And they are really good people helping young entrepreneurs to grow and make companies there in Germany. And right now, I have just finished my studies in Italy, and I'm planning to go to Germany again to work with my startup and even continuing my studies there.
And I think you have an investor now, do you not?
Yeah, actually, we have also an investor, but we have got a little investor Italian who is helping us with a little bit of funds for that point, from point of view.
Well, congratulations. That's a big step
Thank
forward.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, you were telling me that the chatbot can actually read a book.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how that works?
Okay. Actually, basically, 3 weeks ago, Google has launched an experiment called Talk to Books. They use some software called Document Retrieval, Document Reading Retrieval, that is open source, and they made possible to all the developers. What Google has done, Google actually is made a search engine where you type a question and the answer is get by a book. It's a search engine. You have a question and an answer. We have used the same technology brought from Google and we put it in a chatbot. Actually, we don't make question and answer. We make question and conversation.
So the chatbot reads the book back to the student?
Yeah. We bring a book or whatever is it, a manual instruction data text file. We put in our intelligent machine, and the intelligent machine is automatically able to understand what is written inside the book.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's
fascinating. Now,
yeah.
You also have been working with some companies, and you've created a machine learning algorithm that helps with training.
Yeah, yes.
Tell us how that works.
Okay, we actually built also a machine learning algorithm which is able to understand a single student or employee from a company needs when they are doing staff training process or if they are doing a class lesson. Basically, when a course is done in a company, or we can think about a lesson in a class, we actually analyze the interaction from a student to our machine or to an employee with our machine. And with that interaction, we are able to understand where this employee or this student have some lags, and if the student's able to get some more courses, or if he needs some assistance, or if he has to do some more exercises to understand that lesson or argument topic, whatever is it.
Wow, that's going to be really helpful to companies.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's what we are doing right now. We are just testing with some companies, and it's great.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we are even thinking that could be really helpful also for her schools because actually a teacher alone can't follow 25 students.
Exactly.
Students. Yeah.
Now the exciting news is that you can meet Karandip in Colorado on October 24th. Wow, you're 24th. Coming to North America. You're coming to North America.
Yeah, October 31st.
Okay.
Yeah, actually,
Third and fourth. I'm sorry. Yeah, October 3rd and
31st. Okay. On the Halloween.
Oh, 31st. Okay. All right. Yeah. Sorry. Halloween day. Okay. All right. Halloween day. We got to get our dates right. All right.
Yeah. Our project was chosen. We were invited to present our project at the annual conference of higher education called EDUCOS at the University of Denver in Colorado. And yeah, we will go there to present our idea for some colleges from universities from all over the world and show them how chatbots can actually be used in the education world. And also machine learning algorithms can help to make the education better, e-learning more interactive and understand single student's needs and improve it.
Right. And so that's again, the University of Denver, October 31st.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Colorado, you can meet Karandip and his team and see the chatbot in action, I guess. You're going to present
that, correct? Yes, we are going to show the chatbot and how our algorithms work. And basically, in a few words, how artificial intelligence in education can help students.
I see. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. So now, where can, if they want to look online, what's your website address? How can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, actually, you can just look in the Google Plato e-learning. And the website is www.e-plato.com.
All right. That's where you can find Karandip. Thank you so much for the update. And we'll talk to
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you after the fair in Colorado.
Yeah, thank you. Great.
All right. Good luck there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karandip.
Have you subscribed to James's newsletter? When you subscribe, you will receive a free Study It ESL textbook. Visit www.thejamesriceshow.com for more information and join today.
It's time for James's Idiom of the Week.
So we are going to be talking about test idioms. Yes, you love your tests. My son recently passed his driving test, and so he is now officially allowed to drive on the road. Now, the English word test first meant a small bowl used to analyze metals. Yeah, it came from a Latin word, testum, that meant a bowl or a pot made of clay. Yeah, and that bowl was called a test because you used it to examine things. So I bet you did not know that. Yeah, new information from the James Rice Show. So the next time your teacher says, I'm going to give you a test, you can say, I would love a small bowl, teacher. That's a joke. That's a joke. Don't do that to your teacher. Your teacher will give you a difficult, difficult test. All right, but you can still impress her with the knowledge that you've learned from the James Rice Show. All right, so let's take a look at some of those common idioms that use the word test. All right, number one, test of time. Test of time. Will it pass the test of time? This expression is used to describe things like, you know, art, music, film, architecture, inventions that maybe will last a long time and they will not fade away. They will continue to be popular. You know, so the best example, of course, the most famous example is the Mona Lisa painting. Mona Lisa, you know, the painting in the Louvre in France. And did you know that the Mona Lisa is over 500 years old? Yes, 500 years old. And it is still the most famous painting in the world today. It has truly stood the test of time. Boom. All right, number two. Fails or passes the sniff test. The sniff test. Now, this is often used to agree or disagree with someone when they have an idea. You know, for example, let's go to New Zealand by boat from Canada. That doesn't really pass the sniff test, you know, does it? It just doesn't seem possible to take a boat from Canada to New Zealand. And do you want to? All right. So now here's another. Did you know there is actually a medical sniff test? Yes, there is a medical sniff test. So the doctor may smell you. All right. Number three, get your head tested, man. Get your head tested, man. That's what you say to your friend who may have a really crazy or stupid idea. What? You need your head tested. You are crazy. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, number four. Test the waters. Test the waters. This means to try an idea before releasing it into the public. So many products or even movies do some testing to check to see what people think before they release them into the public. So they test the waters. Another did you know, and I am full of did you knows today, that they tested the water with the film Titanic. Yes, you know the film Titanic. You know the famous Celine Dion song? Near, far. Okay, no more singing. I gotta stop singing. I can't control myself. It was originally, the Titanic movie was originally over 4 hours long. Yikes. And people did not like it. All right, so when they tested it, when they tested the waters, it was over 4 hours long. So they cut 45 minutes from the film, and voila, a masterpiece. Voila is a French word. Voila. Okay, so like boom, back in the old days. All right, number five, tried and tested. Tried and tested. So something that has been done again and again and never fails. Like tests in your English class. They are tried and tested. Way to check to see if you understand something. They're tried and tested. Of course, everybody's tried and tested. So it is something that you do. It's common. It's something that everybody's done because it works. All right. So I hope that the James Rice Show will stand the test of time. I have tested the waters, and so far, the reaction is good. No? You disagree? You think I should get my head tested? And that is the idiom of the week.
Don't forget to follow James on Instagram at ConnectWithJames for fun photos and updates on future episodes. Now it's time for Teacher Talk, James's thoughts and insights into teaching international students.
Testing is always a tricky subject in ESL teaching, actually in a lot of teaching. I have never, I want to state this on the record, I have never been a big supporter of standardized tests. You could argue grammar, reading, and writing tests are a little more accurate, but a little bit easier to test, but I've just never been a big supporter. I find speaking, listening, pronunciation skills are much harder to test. And they're harder to test because they are often very, very subjective. So it depends on the listener and their feeling that day, how well the student is doing. However, over the years, I have felt and learned from the students, actually, that testing is very important for accountability and confidence building. All right. So accountability, it helps me as the school manager and director to check what teachers are doing in the class and if it is effective. Okay. And confidence building, it reassures the students that they are moving in the right direction. Even though, you and I know that a lot of the content on a test will be forgotten, it is a sense of satisfaction for the student that they passed the test. And believe it or not, they want a test. The students want a test. In my school, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe around 2012, 2013, I tried to eliminate tests in my school. I tried to stop doing tests, but it was met with widespread panic, disbelief, and anger. Yes, anger. The students wanted to be tested. So testing seems to be so ingrained into our educational culture that it is going to be a very, very tough battle to change. Now, as I mentioned earlier, grammar, reading, and writing skills are much easier to test. And I don't think these tests need to be, discontinued. They are quite simple and straightforward tests. Writing and reading tests, should, focus on a specific skill. Okay, such as, maybe a process test or you're scanning for reading. For speaking, listening, and pronunciation testing, I have not found a fair test that I have seen. Even, the TOEFL or the IELTS. The IELTS, there is a speaking test where it's one-on-one. And I still find them very subjective. And after watching IELTS testers go through an entire day of one-on-one testing, I wonder if the IELTS testers, test people differently at the end of the day versus the beginning of the day. I mean, is it the same? Can you do it in the same, judgment, in the same subjectivity? It is very hard to keep that subjectivity going. You know, and hats off to the IELTS trainer who's out there saying, yes, I can do it. I can do it. I mean, hats off if you can do it. I'm not sure I could do it and have that same subjectivity going along the whole day. Now, when I test students, 100% of my test is how well the students experiment and manipulate the language. It is critical to me that I want the students experimenting and manipulating the language. I do not want them to just regurgitate the answers back to me, okay? I want them to experiment a bit. And that's where they get the better marks, is when they go off book. My students mostly do, for me, presentations, speeches, role plays, but not so much. I love movies. I love them making movies and videos, podcasts or video or vlogs as well. Even short drama skits, you know, theater shows that they could write and produce for the class. So the goal of my test is to take them out of their comfort zone and make them fly with the language. You know, that is the true test of confidence with the language or any life skill. Can we move you out of that comfort zone and you can still function? And in a school, we have the opportunity to make that kind of safe area for the students to practice and to grow. And so I want to take them out and experiment in different forms. And that's the true test. With this type of testing that I do, students must be accountable not only to themselves, but also to the group. So peer pressure, peer help is an excellent way to build their confidence. And as a teacher, I need to monitor each group. And you know, teachers, as well as I do, and students, you guys know out there, that some students will do more work than other students. So I'm not a fan of giving one grade to the entire group, although, you know, there is a school of thought out there that does that. I prefer to monitor the group, but I will give different grades to people in that group, because if I see somebody putting in that extra effort to make their group great, I will notice that, and I want to reward that. Okay, just not one blanket grade for the entire group. My purpose in testing is the process, not the final result. So I want to watch that process. And that's also part of the test that I'm doing with them. Of course, the final production is important as well, but I want to mark and grade that process and how well they're doing outside of their comfort zone and who's doing it better than perhaps others and who needs more help and guidance and who's just, you know, kind of going through the motions and regurgitating. Now, does this style of testing work for all students? No, absolutely not. And that is the issue with testing in general. Some students do not like this kind of testing. Likewise, some students do not like the paper-based tests. So there is no one correct way to make a test. For schools, most demand paper-based tests. And, you know, it's unfortunate that so much of the mark is still based on this type of testing. I mean, even some schools are doing like a 70-30 split or even an 80-20. I mean, still 20%, 30% on how much you can remember. I don't know. Not a big fan. Whenever possible, I try to do more kind of project-based testing and group work if possible. And if you can, and if you have the time, blending the different types of tests is the best way to move forward. And that's what I ended up doing when the students said they wanted tests, was I gave them a weekly test, I gave them a final exam and midterm exam as well if I had them for semesters, but built around those I built in a number of project-based tests. And the paper-based tests were basically, you know, about worth about 10% of their mark. Not a whole lot. But for some reason, they loved getting those to sort of prove to themselves that they could do it. So no correct way to do it, but I do believe very strongly that testing needs to be blended, and you need to try to come up with ways that are different and focus on different skills in the ESL classrooms. And that's the best way to move forward with testing.
Have you downloaded the Study It ESL textbooks yet for your classroom? The Study It textbooks are the first ever digital and interactive textbooks. Once downloaded, Wi-Fi is no longer required. Each book contains video and audio exercises, detailed grammar keynotes, reading and writing assignments, and amazing speaking projects. Grammar, conversation, pronunciation, business English, and listening textbooks are available. Visit www.studyitbooks.com for more information.
1,400 guidance counselors and recruitment officers from U.S. schools and around the world met at Tulane University just this past week for the International Association for College Admission Counseling Conference. And they were talking about the recent decline of the number of students going to the United States. So here are some stats. There were close to 57% of school counselors said that the numbers of international students applying to their schools in the United States are declining, are going down. And that's a lot. I mean, over half of the schools are seeing a decrease in the number of international students. And the drop-off was most noticeable from students from Africa and the Middle East, where 78% decrease in applications into the U.S. over the past year. 78%. And in South and Central America, 75% decrease in applications in the 2017-2018 year. That is huge. Now, applications from Europe dropped by 59%, and Chinese applications fell by 53% during the last school year compared to the previous school year. Now, why is this drop happening? I mean, what is the reason? And obviously, one of the reasons they're jumping on is Trump and the immigration policy. But there are other issues. Safety. Safety is a big concern on and off campus. And, you know, we've seen some of the things that's been happening on the university campuses in the U.S. It's broadcast all over the news. Gun violence. You know, I've spoken about it. There's an open letter to my American friends, which is on the website, www.thejamesriceshow.com. You guys can read that. The gun violence problem in schools, whether it's high school or college or university, you know, this is going to affect parents' decision to send students to United States. And then the other one issue that is causing some concern among overseas parents is that finding a job in the U.S. after they graduate is very difficult and tough. And there are some tough rules there as well compared to other countries. Now, the fact is, I'm reading these numbers and, you know, the U.S. immigration issues and all of the stuff going around with the U.S. immigration, it needs to be cleaned up. Now, I know people are just going to blame Trump and, you know, just jump all over Trump. But the fact is, this problem has been going on for quite some time in the U.S. and it hasn't been cleaned up and it hasn't stopped. And it has been going on, and I'm not just blaming in the U.S., because it has been going on in Canada as well. But here in Canada, a few years back, probably about 2013, 2014, we went through an immigration cleanup, where we cleaned up the immigration policies. And we moved to a merit-based system. So to immigrate to Canada, international students must go to college or university, and then they are given up to a 3-year work permit. And during that period, they can apply to be a citizen of Canada. Essentially, our government wanted educated international students to become educated Canadians. That makes them more employable. That makes them more valuable to society. And in fact, the government is able to now kind of direct certain students into jobs that they want to be filled in the future as well. And the government has created that system. So if you're studying for a specific type of job, you know, perhaps building apps for computers, which is going to be, you know, a big job in the future, or perhaps doing something in healthcare, studying something in healthcare, that will get you more points to become a Canadian citizen. So it'll help you to become a Canadian citizen rather than just studying, you know, kind of general business. If you're doing a job that will actually help Canadian society in the future, you're going to have an easier time to immigrate. Now, I see some of the same debate happening in the U.S. And, you know, Trump is saying, you know, that they need the merit-based system. And, you know, that may be the problem, that the fact that Trump is saying it, you know, nobody wants to listen to him. But the fact is, Canada had to stop the flow of this kind of low-paying, uneducated student/worker. They would sometimes come as a student, but then work illegally. And Canada stopped that. And I got to tell you, when the government made the changes to the Canadian system, it was very harsh. We had some extremely difficult and challenging moments. So I lived through it as a school owner. Many schools were sold. Many schools merged together, and many schools shut down. And, you know, so there is a concern in the U.S. And if it continues, you will start to see some schools close their doors or have a shakeup of the business model. Now, whether Trump says it or not, and whether the debate is solved or not, the fact is that the U.S. is going to change its policy, and it will be more of a merit-based system. It is inevitable. Whether Trump does it now or someone else does it in a couple of years' time as a new president, the merit-based system works. It's working in Canada. It is working in other countries. Is it tougher for international students? Yes. But ultimately, Canada is attracting motivated students. And it doesn't mean wealthy students, but they are students who are coming to Canada to study. They want to make a life in Canada. And that is an attitude change. And that is something different than we saw even 10 years ago. So, you know, we're going to see how this immigration debate goes, but it is clearly hurting schools in the U.S.
Have you subscribed to James's newsletter? When you subscribe, you will receive a free Study It ESL textbook. Visit www.thejamesriceshow.com for more information and join today.
All right, so we cannot leave this week's podcast with, of course, not talking about the World Cup and France's victory over Croatia. It was very tough loss for Croatia, who worked really hard. You know, here in Canada, we were really pulling for Croatia, which may be a surprise because, of course, we have a lot of French speakers in Canada. Maybe the Quebec side was pulling for the French, but most of Canadians, you know, we like the underdog. Croatia is an underdog. So they are, you know, a small country. I think there's like 4 million people in Croatia. And we were pulling for them. And it's too bad that they lost. But an interesting story that I'm going to tell you about the relationship between Croatia and France. And you'll notice that the Croatian flag is quite similar to the French flag. That's because these two countries have a very close past. Because, as you may or may not know, France invented the necktie. Okay, so the necktie that men wear nowadays. But Croatia actually gave them the idea. Yeah. So here's the story behind the French-Croatian necktie collaboration. So 500, 600 years ago, when they were fighting in wars, men wore clothes that were very bright. Okay, not like today's war where everybody, you know, dresses in darkness and in green or black or so you can't be seen. In those days, the battles were close together, okay? They were fighting close together, and they had to know that the blue guy is on my side and the yellow guy is on the other side. So they wore bright, bright clothes. Now, France was in a war with somebody, I don't remember who, but France was in a very tough, tough war, and they called in some Croatian mercenaries, okay, Croatian mercenaries. Now, students out there, you might not know the word mercenary. It's basically it's a hired gun. So they don't live with France. They're not French citizens, but they're very skilled fighters. You know, in the old West, they used to bring in a hired gun to kill or scare away the bad guys. And so anyways, France hired these Croatian skilled fighters to help them with the war, which of course they won. But Croatia, because they were not French, they wore the French colors, but they also wore a necktie around their neck. And it was in the Croatian colors, so that the Croatian fighters knew who they were, even though they were wearing the French clothing in battle. And in honor of that fight and that victory, France created the necktie because of Croatia, and to say thank you to Croatia. Yeah, you did not know that, did you? So France invented the necktie, but it was inspired by Croatia. And, you know, even now, those flags and those countries are fairly close to each other in terms of colors and style. So if you look closely at the Croatian flag, there is a French flag in the background. And there is, of course, the colors of Croatia based on that famous battle. Yeah, so some interesting history facts on the James Rice Show. All right, so thank you guys for tuning in this week. And I hope you guys have another great week. We'll see you next week. And remember, be crazy.
Thanks for listening to the James Rice Show. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter and send us your questions or comments at www.thejamesriceshow.com.